Here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Meanwhile,
How you doing?
All right, let's do it.
Take two.
Take two what?
Go.
Take two Advil. Call me in the morning. No, you're not going to take it? All right. Welcome to our Flicks of the Week for a couple of average Joes. I am Joe Spiegel.
I'm Mike Sutherland.
All right. This week, my pick is the, actually, it is an HBO original documentary. This is on HBO On Demand. It is called Going Clear, Scientology in the Prison of Belief. It is, of course, about the quote-unquote religion of Scientology and everything that goes along with it. And your pick is going to be?
The Corsican Brothers. Cheech and Chong's The Corsican
Brothers. All right, so we're going to talk about those, and we're also going to talk about what? What was that?
What?
Oh, you did the head roll thing, and
I have a crick in my neck. Just fucking.
It looked like the. Oh God! What are you doing?
No,
there?
I have a stinger or something going on.
From giving me oral pleasure.
Yes, from giving nobody oral pleasure.
No retard from the fight. All right, and then we're also gonna. I'll make a quick mention of Valerian, this new trailer that we saw from Luc Besson.
Okay.
You have anything?
No.
There's nothing.
No, there was something I saw, but I can't remember what the fuck it was, so it doesn't matter.
All right.
There's some cool biz. News. Yeah, cool biz.
Cool.
There's some cool fucking...
Cool whip.
Yeah. Movie news and shit that we talked about yesterday, but no, I totally forgot about it. Maybe I should look that up, huh?
Maybe you should. Yeah, maybe you should. So... You'll figure that out. We'll figure that out. And we're going to give you a very entertaining podcast or fall asleep trying.
Oh, there is a Fantastic Beast 2 already.
Does it matter? What the fuck is this? Will Dumbledore be openly gay in Fantastic Beast sequel? Does it matter? Really? I mean, either he is or he isn't.
Oh, here, Jessica Chastain's new movie coming out. Looks interesting. I just saw this trailer. Miss Sloan?
Looks like something... Luc Besson would do just from the picture.
I thought it was Bryce Dallas Howard at first.
Yeah, they're very, very. They look very similar, but Jessica Chastain has a tougher face and more freckles.
Okay, so the movie is called Sloan, and she plays Elizabeth Sloan, who is a fixer set on facing down the gun lobby. It looks like an interesting trailer.
Okay, well, we can definitely talk about that after we talk about our flicks of the week.
Great.
All right, so here we go. They're doing a Lord of the Rings spinoff, huh? I still haven't clicked on that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out. All right. So I was searching for what my flick of the week was going to be, and I started just going through movies on my on-demand and Netflix, you know, through my queue, and I was going to do a Dana Carvey original Netflix stand-up special he did. But then I was, you know, it was funny, but it wasn't the kind of funny that made me laugh a bunch. It was more like smirky funny. So I was like, you know what, that's not really, when something's like middle ground, you know, it's not worth really mentioning on a show as my flick of the week. So as I was going through the other night, through my on-demand, I came across the Scientology thing, documentary on HBO. And I just... There's something about Scientology that's fascinating, and it's not like a, oh, it's interesting, I want to be a part of that. It's not like that at all, because it's not. It's like the opposite. It's like a train wreck, and you just want to watch it, right? You want to see the fucking train wreck.
Right.
And just to see how people get messed. Same thing with Jonestown, okay? Jonestown is fascinating. I love the documentaries about that shit, man. They, you know, because all the fuckers drank the Kool-Aid. You know, when it shows like the aerial footage of all those bodies just lying there. That's some creepy, intriguing shit. And then when you find out that a U.S. senator got killed going down there, you know, and all this stuff happened. I mean, it was just fucking fascinating. So cult type things. That's what it is. That is what fascinates me is cult. Religious cults or whatever you want to call them. The David Koresh thing with Waco, that's fucking fascinating. Same thing, I just brought up Jonestown, and then you got Scientology. Scientology, and we're going to use this on one of our conspiracy theory podcasts. We will.
Heaven's Gate.
We'll go into it. Yeah, definitely. But Scientology is a cult that just hasn't gone over that barrier yet. You know,
really?
That, let me finish. That it hasn't gone over the mass suicide barrier yet. You know, the Kool-Aid barrier. That's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it the Kool-Aid barrier. They haven't gone that far yet, but they're fucking there, man. And they're close. And I don't know, maybe when the guy who runs the whole fucking schmear now, David Maskevich or whatever the fuck his name is. Yeah, Maskevich. When he took over for L. Ron Hubbard, you could just tell that this guy from, you know, interviews that they've shown of him and of just allegations and all this stuff, especially from former members, I can tell that this guy who's making so much money off of this shit, you really think he's just going to want to die without a, you know, without some kind of final statement or something? I don't know. When this guy comes close to the end of his rope, I wonder what he's going to pull.
Hold on.
Thank you.
Fuck.
So, we are definitely not going to see that movie, Trolls, no. All right, so this documentary, I came across it. Usually you're very good without, you know, the sound.
I usually have it turned down, but I'm on a website that insists on auto-playing.
Oh, Cinema Blend. Yeah, they love
it. That's why I didn't really want to say the name of the website.
You know what? It's okay because...
No, it's not.
No, it sounds like we're advertising them. But see, even if some people take it as advertising and they actually go to their site, they'll get pissed off very quickly and then they'll refuse to ever go to them ever again. You see what I'm saying?
No.
Yeah. So, I watched this documentary and here's the funny part. Me and my daughter, we were going to watch a movie. I think we're going to watch Lost Boys or something. And what happened was... my daughter was making dinner, so I said, fuck it, I'm going to watch a few minutes of the Scientology documentary, right? So I'm watching, and it's one of those documentaries that's so good, so intriguing, that you want to watch a little more, and then you want to watch a little more, and next thing you know, you want to watch at least half of it, and then you're like, oh, fuck, I'm already halfway through it. You know what? I want to finish this shit, and that I couldn't stop it. It was just, I had to watch the whole goddamn thing, because it's just so intriguing, right? The premise is simple. It's got three acts with it, okay? The first act, it deals with all these people that are being interviewed by the director of the film, Alex Debney, who, what the fuck is his name? Yeah, Gibney, I'm sorry, Alex Gibney. He's interviewing former members, and he's also, he shows footage and a bunch of other things. So, first act of it, I know I'm all over the place right now because I'm really fucking sleepy, so forgive me. But the first act talks about these members, how they joined, the joining
process. Former Scientologists.
Yes. It talks about how they joined and, you know, what their circumstances were with it. What's funny about it is this is an anti-Scientology documentary, but the way it starts off when these people that are being interviewed are talking about how they joined up with the quote unquote religion. They make it sound like it's uplifting and it was like the best decision they ever made of their lives, right? But it's not. It's well done. It's done to, I guess, it's to make it, you know, go uphill, right? And then it's like a plot, like everything's hunky dory, and then the plunge, right? And then that's what it is. So this first act, they talk about all the good things that happened when they first signed up with Scientology. You know, how your life's going to change and everything. And you meet all these different people and it's all great, right? Your life's changing for the better. And then the second act deals with the history of Scientology. And it does a whole thing about L. Ron Hubbard, you know, who's the guy who created this shit, all right? And we'll get into this more on the other podcast, but... It's pretty, I mean, even just from watching this, you learn that the guy pretty much started this fucking religion, this quote-unquote religion, as a tax evasion scheme because he got tired of the government taking a bunch of his money from him, okay? And he did it, and all these people latched onto it, and it just became this juggernaut of insanity. And the third act deals with allegations and the whole, you know, all the allegations about, you know, abuse and intimidation and things like that, and retribution and control, things like that, that deal with the Church of Scientology. Now, all the people that are being interviewed, there's people that were like top, you know, quote-unquote lieutenants that were connected with David Maskevich, who's the guy who took over for L. Ron Hubbard after he died in, what was it, like 1996 or right around there. And these people, I mean, there's footage of them right next to him. So it's not like they're making shit up. They were fucking there. Because when you see like rallies and stuff like that, these people were there. So you have a lady who, I'll just say her name is Spanky because that's her nickname. She was a very close friend of John Travolta's, for example. And she knew him for a long, long time because Travolta has been and still is a member of the Scientology Church since the 70s. And he was the first poster boy for this religion. And she was very close with him. And you can tell that there is this hurt. When she starts talking about Travolta, you can tell how important the friendship was to her. And that the fact that he has completely cut ties with her and doesn't talk to her. And it's sad. It's pretty sad because she, you know, you can tell that she cares about him still to this day. And there's rumors. And the rumors are that Travolta won't leave the religion because of blackmail.
His dirty secrets.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, because one of the things that the religion does, the church, is they actually make you go to these psychiatry. Well, they're not called psychiatry, but you go to these things where they actually record you. And you're supposed to, it's like a lie detector test kind of thing. And you keep talking about certain emotional things that you're connected to. And the more you, and it's supposed to read your emotional level while you're doing it. And the more you talk about it, the lower the level gets until it's like you've talked it out of your system kind of thing. Anyway, all those things have been recorded. And so one of the allegations is that they have recordings on every single member of their church so that if they ever do turn against them, that they have this to use against them as blackmail tool. Also,
which is stupid. I mean, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I know.
Honestly, who gives a shit? Oh, we're going to blackmail you because we have recordings of you saying that you fucked some dude. Okay, so let it go. Or let it go out to the public because, you know, it'll be news for 2 days, 3 days at the most.
And that's common sense, right? That sounds like rational common sense. But here's the thing. When you're in something like this or celebrity lifestyle and all that stuff like that, right or wrong, you convince yourself of the grandiosity of it all, right?
Right.
And so you can't do anything to taint that.
Right.
And so
I understand it.
Yeah, people make themselves believe anything. Right. And
it's why people are still stuck in the same positions that they're still stuck in.
And look, I don't want to give away the whole documentary because I think it's more fascinating when you watch it. But with the whole Tom Cruise thing that they get into, fascinating to see. I mean, because when you see footage of like his birthday parties and stuff like that, where Miscavige is right there with him while he's being entertained by, you know, by singers and stuff like this, and you can just see this guy is always there to make sure that Cruise is as happy as possible, so that he's always distracted. And then you have when they show footage of interviews that Tom Cruise has at events and stuff like that that all deal with Scientology, how fucking deluded he is about this shit. It's scary. And they, you know, they talk about the whole Nicole Kidman thing and how she never says anything because she signed an NDA. And so she just got her kids and left.
Right.
You know, and one of the biggest things, and this is what pulls Paul Haggis, the, you know, Oscar winning director, into this whole thing, is the whole thing about disconnecting. Is like, say, Paul Haggis, who was part of the church for over 30 years. What made him leave was this rule that they have in Scientology called disconnecting, where
right. This is the fourth time that you said it, so get to the fucking point.
Fuck you. Is where if there's anyone that is a threat to your belief in the Church of Scientology, you have to disconnect with them in all ways whatsoever, and so that you keep a fresh mind, right? But also one of the things you find out about this whole thing during the documentary is that the members are not allowed to get on the internet. They're not allowed to read any negative publicity about science, you know, the church. If you do anything against the church, if you turn against the church itself, they will send people out to your, wherever you're at, and harass you. And there's footage of it. These guys that left, these lieutenants that left, they recorded these guys harassing their wives and family members at their homes.
Right.
You know, and they don't like physically touch anybody, but they're there like watching your house with video cameras and shit like that. And it's just, fuck, I wonder what else they do, you know, that they haven't shown. But whatever, it's just fascinating. It's fascinating to see the level of delusion that people will convince themselves of just to be a part of something. and the links that an organization will go to keep itself powerful. I mean, they had this huge celebration when it was finally when the church itself was deemed by the IRS or the federal government to be a religion, a tax-free religion. They celebrate. I mean, there was this huge rally about it, and they're fucking firing cannons off in the air and shit, you know, like fireworks and shit, you know, finally, you know. So, this thing is worth over $3 billion in actual money and assets. This church is huge.
Right. Have you seen the church in L.A.?
No. Well,
it's fucking massive.
Oh, yeah, I did see that in the documentary. It is fucking huge.
Yeah, it's the size of a city block.
It looks like I know, it's... It looks like an extremely rich, like, tourist destination hotel.
No, it doesn't. It looks like a Gothic church. It's a fucking 3-square-mile Gothic church that's like 40 or 50 stories high.
I know what you're talking about. I saw it.
Yeah, it has a big fucking sign on it that says Scientology.
I know. It's laughable how much bullshit it starts to become, but whatever. It's funny because, I mean, people need to see this documentary because my daughter was watching this. She goes, I didn't know that about Tom Cruise. She goes, why doesn't he leave? And I explained to her why he doesn't leave. I said, look, Tom Cruise has been the poster boy for Scientology since the 80s. Since the end of the 80s. The end of the 80s, early 90s. And when you have someone, a figurehead that brings so many members and so much revenue into this business, because this is what it is. It's not a church. It's a fucking business. When you bring that much in, the people that run it are going to do whatever they have to do to keep you happy and quiet. And that's what the church does, and that's what David Mascovich does to Tom Cruise. They have him disconnect from everything. They've had him disconnect from his previous wives, his previous, you know, friend relationships, his daughter Suri that he had with Katie Holmes. He doesn't have any contact with him whatsoever. So they keep him quiet and they keep him happy like a fucking, I don't know, a fat kid loving cake, man. And that's why. So as long as you keep him like that, you can keep using him for as long as you want to. It looks like the Hotel of Terror almost. All right. So anyway, Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Disbelief is an excellent documentary, and anyone should see it. And then, you know, make up your own opinion about it afterwards. But it is, yeah, there you go, man. It's like the new Jonestown.
It sure the fuck is.
All right, so I'm done with that one.
Yeah, this is the one I'm talking about. The Church of Scientology, the Celebrity Center International in Hollywood, which also looks kind of, see, it's all gothic-y.
Yeah.
Right there over by Sunset Strip.
Yeah, I've seen the gigantic one.
Right there. That's it right there.
The one that's like wide. Yeah, that one, the blue one.
This one?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, that one. That one is in Hollywood, but I don't know where exactly. Doesn't matter. You know, it is what it is. My belief is always, you know, live and let live type of thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't care what your religion is. Don't try to fucking suck me into it. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you're a bad person for believing in whatever religion it is, right?
Uh-huh.
And my biggest problem with Scientologists is that they don't give a shit. They will fucking try to push their shit onto you no matter what.
They're honey badgers.
Yeah, and I fucking can't stand that. They rise my ire, as it were.
Well,
I wanted to read something here.
What?
So Harlan Ellison, who is the author of over 900 stories,
you sure you don't want to save this for when we do the conspiracy?
No, we're going to do this right now. He's won 8 Hugo Awards for his work in science fiction, short stories, and films, 2 Nebula Awards from the Science Fiction Writers of America and Edgar, and 3 times received the Writers Guild of America Award for Most Outstanding Teleplay. Among his award-winning short stories are Repent, Harlequin, Said the TikTok Man, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, which has also been made into a movie, The Beast That Shouted Love at the Heart of the World, and Jeff Diaz 5. As well as The Death Bud and Adrift.
Bird. Death Bird.
Death Bird. Death Bud. And Adrift Just Off the Isle.
That's some killer bud, bro.
Langahans. He's also written The City on the Edge of Forever.
Okay.
And the motion picture of Boy and His Dog. So
I still have never seen A Boy and His Dog. I know it's post-apocalyptic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he was being interviewed, and this is what Ellison said on Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard. So Ellison, Scientology is bullshit. Man, I was there the night L. Ron Hubbard invented it, for Christ's sakes. Him and Philip K. Dick were there.
Yeah.
I was sitting in a room with L. Ron Hubbard and a bunch of other science fiction writers. Hubbard was famous among fiction writers because he was the first to have an electric typewriter. He claimed to have written Dianetics in a weekend, and nobody can deny it. That's true. He wrote Dianetics in one weekend, and you know how he used to write? He used to take a roll of white paper, like paper you wrap fish in. He had it on the wall, and he would roll it into the typewriter and he'd begin typing. When he was done, he would tear it off and leave it as one whole long novel. We were sitting around one night. Who else was there? Alfred Bester, Cyril Kornbluth, Lester Del Rey, Ron Hubbard, who was making a penny a word and had been for years, and said, "This bullshit's got to stop. I got to make money. I want to get rich." He's supposed to have said on the same night, the question is not how to make $1 million, but how to keep it. Right. And somebody said, "Why don't you invent a new religion? They're always big." We were clowning, you know, become Elmer Gantry. He'll make a fortune. He says, "I'm going to do it." Sat down, stole a little bit from Freud, stole a little bit from Jung, a little bit from Elder, a little bit of encounter therapy, pre-Yanov primal screaming, took all that bullshit. Threw it all together, invented a few new words because he was a science fiction writer, you know, engrams and regression, all that bullshit. And then he conned John Campbell, who was crazy as 1,000 battlefields. I mean, he believed any goddamn thing. He really believed blacks were inferior. I mean, he really believed that.
Yeah.
He was also very nervous when I was in his office because I was a Jew, you know. He was afraid maybe I would spring horns or something. Anyhow, the way he conned John was that he had J.A. Winter, who was a doctor, who was a close friend of John's, and got him to run this article on Dianetics, the new science of mental health. Dianometry was the article. Right, and the science fiction writers or fans will go for any goddamn thing. They'll believe anything. They'll believe in the abominable snowman and Bermuda Triangle and pyramid power and EST and Scientology. In the second coming, they'll believe in any goddamn thing. They don't give a shit. They go see Star Wars. They think it's for real. So science fiction fans pick it up. They begin proselytizing. He starts making money. When he had made enough money, he was able to spread out a little bit more. Then he got more cuckoo. You know, pre-Charlie Manson assholes that had no place else to go. He began talking to these loons as if Dianetics really meant something. Then he wanted to get tax exempt status, so he called it the Church of Scientology. Now, they've gotten so big that they own property all over the country, and it's impossible to stop it. They infiltrated the FBI. They infiltrated the tax department. The funny thing is, Ron Hubbard and I still occasionally communicate with each other. Every once in a while, a couple, three times a year, we exchange letters, and I write to him, you know, and I say, "Hey, Ron, when is this bullshit going to cease? The cuckoos are really driving me crazy." They come around the house with pamphlets, and he writes me back and says, it's the good work. It's the good work. It's all very funny stuff. He was going to write a new story for me for the last Dangerous Visions, but I guess he got too busy counting his money. I don't know.
And when was this written?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Obviously before he fucking died.
Well, yeah.
So it gives a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wings. November, December 78. So there you go. 1978. Right. Here we go. Hubbard and the Scientology problem. There's your website. My pick of the week is Cheech and Chong's The Corsican Brothers. It's a fucking awful movie. It's the sixth movie that had Cheech and Chong in it. Came out in 1984, which is pretty amazing. They made six movies between whatever in 1984.
Was it mid-70s?
Yeah, something like that. So it's a parody of Alexandre Dumas' novel, The Corsican Brothers. The movie starts off with a band. So Cheech plays like a fucking an Elvis-type guy.
Yeah.
And Chong is the hardcore heavy metal dude. And they are in France performing with their band throughout the streets. And disliking their brand of music, the locals pay off the band to vacate. And shortly after, the two lead brothers, two band members meet a gypsy storyteller. I can't even talk tonight. She tells them the story of the Corsican brothers who attempt to overthrow a cruel member of the monarchy. Fouquar, that's it. Instead of fucker, yeah. It's Fouquar. But in the credits list, his name is Fucker, F-U-C-K-E-R. It's funny. After the story, they continue to play in the streets and give an epic final performance in a spot where their music seems to be much more accepted as no one tries to pay them to vacate. The opening and closing of the movie bear no consequence on the actual movie in and of itself.
Okay.
So the Corsican Brothers, the reason why it's the Corsican Brothers is they share, it's like Tomax and Zaymot from G.I. Joe. Yeah. Are you done picking yourself?
Don't fucking worry about it. Keep doing your shit. What the fuck?
What do you mean, what the fuck? Oh, you're fucking sitting there picking at yourself.
So what?
It's hard to concentrate.
There you go.
Yeah, that makes it easier. So Cheech Marin plays Luis. Tommy Chong plays Lucien, or Louis, or Louis. Roy Dotrice plays the evil Fouquet, or Yule Jailer. See? Fouquet. Shelby Chong as Princess, Ricky Marin Edie as McClurg. Princess 2, Edie McClurg, Robbie Chong, Jean-Claude Dreyfus as Marquis Duhicki, Raydon Chong. So basically it's a Cheech and Chong and Cheech and Chong and Cheech and Chong and Cheech and Chong movie.
Yeah.
I mean, all the Chongs and all the Marins are in it, and which is fine. Problem is that it's not a fucking great movie at all. But it was on, it came out my brother's birthday in 1984. It was on, and I hadn't seen it in such a long time that I was like, okay, I've got to see it. But basically, this is what's going on is it's kind of like the Three Musketeers, if you really want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
As I was saying, Tomax and Zaymot from G.I. Joe, where one has the feelings of the other. Like if one gets hit in the stomach, the other one feels it, or, you know, hit in the head and the other one feels it.
Yeah.
And it starts off with them being born, and they have full on mustaches. They didn't shave for the scene.
Mm.
They're dressed as babies with fucking hair all over the place, you know. And then it just kind of goes through it until Cheech and Chong are in their house. How do I put it this way? They were born to rich people, and then their fathers die. So now they're poor, and their nanny's taking care of them in some fucking cottage in the woods. And they end up burning the house down when they're a little bit older, and they start making up this story. But they can't remember where they live, so one goes one way, one goes the other. And 20 years passes, and they come, and Cheech shows up out of nowhere dressed as a Mexican. And he's looking, he's in the same spot where the house was, you know, and then out of nowhere, his brother comes out. Now, the joke in the entire movie is anytime there's some danger, fucking Tommy Chong has a rope handy,
yeah,
and he swings away. It doesn't matter exactly what happens, but if there's a rope present and he's holding on to it, the rope's either going to pull him up,
yeah,
or he'll just swing off screen, kind of like, you know, Batman,
yeah,
or swing on screen, right, to save the day at the last minute. So that was actually a pretty funny joke. But for the rest of the fucking movie, like the guy that plays, you know, Roy Dotrice, the guy that plays the evil Fouquet,
yeah,
I mean, like, he played Leopold Mozart in Amadeus. He's also known for his role as the alchemist Helene in season 2 of Game of Thrones.
Okay.
So he's 93 years old. Wow. He looks like Harvey Keitel.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find a picture of him right now, Roy Dotrice. So that's him right there.
Okay.
See? Here he is in Game of Thrones. Here he is in Amadeus. Oh, he's in Hellboy 2. There you go. He played.
Oh, okay. He was on Beauty and the Beast with Ron Perlman. He played Father.
Yeah. He played King Balor in Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
Well, huh?
He looks like, to the wench.
Can't hear you.
You come to the right place, my boy. You know what I'm talking about?
Probably.
Never Ending Story.
So the evil Fouquet, who is kind of like the Marquis de Sade. So, you know, like I said, the Corsican Brothers and the Three Musketeers are relatively one and the same novel, whereas there's an evil bad guy, like, God, I just said his fucking name. This is pathetic. My brain just fucking shuts down on me when I'm going. Cardinal Richelieu.
Okay.
Okay. Or in the Corsican Brothers, it's Fouquet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... The establishment is taking over. Peasants don't like it. It's good to be the king type of thing. You know, in fact, it was filmed on the same grounds as History of the World Part 1, where during the French Revolution.
Yeah.
So this movie's awful. That's all I have to say. They take over. Look, this is fucking difficult in so many ways because, again, this movie is shit. It's shit.
Dude, I just wonder... Like it's fine. I'm totally for you picking a bad movie if you can just run away with describing it. Like
I'm trying to run away with describing it. Corsican Brothers. I got to make sure that I'm what. Okay. The Corsican Brothers are two conjoined brothers who, though separated at birth, can still feel each other's pains. It's been adapted many times on stage and film. It's 1841. The narrator travels to Corsica and stays at the home of the widow Savilla de Franchi, who lives near Olmedo and Sulacaro. She is the mother of former conjoined twins Luis and Lucien. Luis is a lawyer in Paris, while Lucien clings to his Corsican roots and stays at his mother's home. The brothers are separated at birth by a doctor. Despite being separated, they can still feel their emotions even at a distance. Lucien has a mission to undertake with reluctance. He is to meditate in a vendetta between the Orlandi and Colonna families and invites the narrator to accompany him and meet the head of the Orlandi family. So that's what I'm having a problem with, is the fact that they basically made the Corsican brothers as the fucking, instead of Romeo and Juliet type,
yeah,
they made it more Three Musketeers type with this Fouquet guy who plays Cardinal Richelieu, you know? And other than that,
mm-hmm,
it's kind of, it has similarities. You know, while Louis is not a lawyer in Paris, he ends up being, he says Mexico because he loves tacos,
yeah,
but he probably went to Spain. But the joke is that he's every time you look at a guy's trying to arrest him, he's like, I'm not Mexican, man. Leave me alone, right?
Yeah.
And then you have Tommy Chong's character, Lucien, who is this fighter guy, you know, and he has a mission to undertake to save France from the evil Fouquet. And see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
So they took two different genres, same writer, because Dumas wrote a ton of shit, you know?
Yeah.
But he wrote The Three Musketeers, The Count of Monte Cristo, and,
Crisco?
Yeah, Count of Monte Cristo. Because it's a tasty sandwich. I was going to say it was a sandwich until you fucking stopped it, but, and of course, The Corsican Brothers. But like I said, the movie is shit because of that. Shit. You know, so halfway through me talking about the movie, I realized that this is not, these two fucking books are not even the same, and yet Cheech and Chong turned it into a fucking Three Musketeers meets the goddamn Corsican Brothers, and it really pisses me off.
Mailed.
Yeah.
Dude, look, I don't remember this movie at all. All I remember about this movie is the part where his arm slides into the fucking horse. That's,
yeah,
it.
And there was some funny scenes, but pretty much, and, you know, you have this annoying ditz of a girlfriend who Cheech is supposedly in love with. And then you have the other girl that Chong is in love with. They're sisters. So the brothers like the sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird, because if they were to marry each other, it'd be all incesty.
Not really.
If a brother marries a sister, if you and I are brothers and we meet two girls that are sisters,
mm-hmm,
and you marry one of the sisters, she becomes my sister.
Yeah, in law.
And the other one becomes my sister.
In law.
Again.
That's not really incest.
Technically, it is.
Technically, I don't give a shit.
Well, technically, in the eyes of the law, so go fuck yourself.
Fuck them. It adds to the kink factor.
You don't know shit about shit.
You would fucking, like, that would stop you.
Well, first and foremost, we're not brothers, so that's okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Nope. Trying to...
If you and Mark met two fucking hotties that were related to each other, like, that would stop you guys?
Actually, it would. Yeah, so Ricky Marin. That's funny. Ricky Marin plays one of the princesses.
Yeah.
But Ricky Marin's character in the movie falls in love with Tommy Chong, whereas the other one, hold on a second, the other one is a Chong, Shelby Chong.
She looks nothing like Ray Dawn.
Yeah, and is the wife and comedian of actor Tommy Chong. Anyways, I thought it was funny that Cheech and Chong are in the movie, and then, like, Cheech and Chong's wife play the exact opposite of who their spouses are.
Oh, like the
so yes, is like, yes, which is pretty funny if you want to. And then you have Edie McClure, Robbie Chong as Princess Number 3, whoever the fuck that is. Robbie Lynn, and then you have Ray Don Chong who plays. There's Robbie Chong right there, who looks like Ray Don Chong.
Just like Ray Don Chong.
Yeah. I know, it's fucking crazy. Maybe they're twins.
I guess.
Man, Tommy Chong's got to fucking lay off his wife, man. One, two, three, four, five fucking kids just with Maxine Sneed.
Change his name to Tommy Dong.
No shit, Tommy. I need to stick my dong into things. Yeah, he's got two different wives and five kids. Anyways, The Corsican Brothers is not a. If you're going to watch it, be high as fuck and watch it. Luckily, you know, marijuana is legal now. You can fucking, you know, enjoy it. But you got to be high as fuck to watch this movie.
I would say this is a movie only for hardcore Cheech and Chong fans.
Yeah.
Who are high as fuck.
See, I saw this. It came out in 1984, so I was 13 when it came out.
Yeah.
And I thought the movie sucked when I was 13, but enjoyed it for what it was. You know, Cheech and Chong. Everybody's like, oh, Cheech and Chong. You got to go see a Cheech and Chong movie, right? You know, and you're thinking that it's going to be full of pot and fucking, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And it's not.
No. Why? It's a simple formula. You get high, hilarity ensues. That's it. That's Cheech and Chong. When you go outside of that, you get the Corsican brothers. Enough
yeah,
said.
Exactly.
So, all right. Last up, man. I didn't see a lot of movie news recently, but at a movie that we saw tonight that we'll do a review for next week. Don't worry about that. That's not what we're talking about. We saw a trailer for a Luc Besson sci-fi movie that I didn't even know was being made or anything.
I did, but I forgot about.
Now
I had heard about it.
Now, this movie doesn't look bad. That's not my point with this. It's called Valerian, the city of a thousand planets, or Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, and it doesn't look bad. It looks very interesting. It looks very detailed, a little too animated in certain scenes, but still, it looks grandiose. But regardless of how grandiose this movie looks like it's going to be, I almost guarantee you that this movie is going to be a major dud in the box office. I don't care if it's a good movie or not.
Why do you say that?
Because it has that look. It has that John Carter of Mars or Jupiter Ascending.
Really?
Or I can tell by the way it looks that this is not going to be a lot of people's cup of tea. The Fifth Element was not a big money maker either, okay? That movie didn't make a lot of money. It made enough to pay for itself, but that's it. It wasn't a huge mega blockbuster like it was supposed to be. Yeah, I know. I've already seen this, the international trailer.
They just fired the Death Star.
I know, and that was bullshit because they didn't test it until New Hope, supposedly.
Well, they still got to do a weapons test.
You know that everyone in this movie is going to die or go into exile, right? Because they're not in a New Hope.
So, A New Hope isn't about these guys.
Yeah, you know what I mean. You know. They gave their lives to get these plans to the rebellion.
Fucking Darth Vader looks awesome.
Who do you think's playing him?
There's rumors that Hayden Christensen is playing him.
I think they should. Not like he's going to be talking anyway.
But what's funny is fucking trailers with their goddamn...
Every few months will go by and then another Rogue One trailer comes out and then I show it to my kids. And every single time... My kids are like a symbol of the short attention span of their generation. All right? And don't talk shit because I know you. You're going to say, no, it's just your fucking kids. No, it isn't just my fucking kids.
Oh, no, it's not just your kids, but your kids are fucking douches sometimes.
Douchebaggery aside, I'm talking about just their short attention span.
That's what I mean.
Well, wait, when is this movie set? I'm like,
I want to do dirty things to Carla Devine.
And what was she in?
Suicide Squad.
Okay. She was
the
Yeah.
This movie looks really fucking good. I'm sorry.
Like I said, the movie doesn't look bad. It doesn't look bad at all. But I can see this being a huge box office failure because it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's not, dude. I can
It's tell. Not everybody's cup of tea, but Star Wars is. Star Wars Rogue One, the Han Solo movie that everybody wants,
I know what you're
the Boba
doing
Fett
right
movie.
Now. I know you're just doing that on purpose, but I'm telling you.
No, I'm not doing it on purpose.
This
is huge different. This there's not a huge difference between this and Star Wars.
This is a $180 million French film.
Okay.
Okay. About space that no one knows anything about.
Okay.
This movie is not going to be a hit.
Really?
I believe it
really?
Won't be.
It's got elements of fucking The Fifth Element in it. Then people go, oh, Luc Besson. And then they see this fucking trailer and they're instantly reminded of Fifth Element and they're going to go see the fucking movie.
Yeah, because Fifth Element made so much money when it came out in theaters.
It's a hit. Doesn't matter.
Look.
It's a fucking cult classic.
Your
argument's invalid.
I'm making a prediction. And
I
you're
was talking about The Fifth Element, and you're taking it to a whole fucking different level.
Okay,
of
so what? The Thing remake was a flop too, but it's now a cult classic.
No, the
what's
Thing,
your point?
The Thing remake from 1981?
1982, yes.
Okay, it was a flop.
Yeah, I said that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah,
it was a flop, but now it is a cult classic.
Yeah, no, it was a money flop. Everybody loved the fucking movie.
When I say flop, it's a money maker. That's what I'm talking about, money.
Yeah, that's all you care about.
I'm not talking
about
no.
Money
you,
shit.
You,
it's a flop because it doesn't make enough money.
You're trying to change what I'm saying, and I'm giving you a specific. This movie is going to flop box office. I didn't say the movie's going to suck. I don't think the movie's going to suck. I think the movie looks very interesting.
Dude,
okay?
Do you see the fucking cast that's in this movie?
Herbie Hancock. Rutger Hauer. Oh, everything Rutger Hauer is a fucking
John
flop.
Goodman.
Okay.
Ethan Hawke, Sam Spruill.
Clive Owen. I love Clive Owen.
Clive Owen. Rihanna.
Yeah, I saw Rihanna.
Fucking Carla Devine, Dane DeHaan.
So, I don't want this movie to flop. I don't. And I don't think it's going to suck.
Dude, this movie is... Do you know who's going to go see this movie? The older generation. My generation and above. This came out in 1967, and it's going to perform huge overseas. And it was a fucking direct influence on both Star Wars and The Fifth Element.
Okay.
That's all I got. That's all I care. I just wanted to point some stuff out, but apparently you don't give a shit, so whatever.
Look, I am the average Joe. The reason why this shit's called Average Joe's is because I'm the average guy. And I'm telling you, the way this shit looks, a lot of people aren't going to fucking feel it.
Nope.
And they're not going to go see it.
You're fucking wrong.
I hope I am wrong. I don't think I am. This movie is going... But the attitude that you're giving me about it, I actually kind of want it to flop just so I can say, fuck you.
Okay.
But no, I just... Just like how Jupiter Ascending, man. Jupiter Ascending is like...
That's a bullshit movie anyway.
That was a 5 out of 10. That was nothing special. But
we're talking about a fucking story that ran from 1967 through 2010.
Okay.
So 43 years this story has been running.
Okay.
How many other stories do you know have been running for 43 years?
Okay. How many times have you ever...
How many other stories do you know have been running for 43 years?
I don't know.
Peanuts.
Okay. Garfield?
No.
I don't know.
How many science fiction stories have been running for 43 years?
I don't know.
10-10? That's not science fiction, but 10-10 is a story that's been running for a long, long time.
Okay. How many times have you brought up the Valerian?
I've never brought up Valerian.
Exactly. That's my point right there.
But it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Okay. Meet the Press has been on for, what, 50 fucking years? I never hear anyone talk about it. It doesn't mean anything. I just don't see this being...
Nobody talks about 60 Minutes.
Yeah, only old people watch it.
Okay. This is a fucking huge international... This is a worldwide fucking popular comic. It's been running for 40 years. If it wasn't just because it's in French, doesn't mean anything. You have a ton of fucking... You have Mobius. You have a ton of other shit that's been done by spectacular artists and writers and creators that have been worldwide phenomenons. That have been featured in magazines such as Heavy Metal, which I'm pretty sure that this was in Heavy Metal, National Lampoon style magazines, things like that. But just because I haven't heard of it doesn't mean anything. Just because you haven't heard of it doesn't mean anything. This fucking story has been going for 43 years.
Okay, so in France, which still doesn't have a huge population.
That's what I'm talking about.
It'll do good in France.
No, you don't see. You're thinking, oh, just because it's in France, it's in French magazine. It was only published in France. No, it wasn't published in France. It's a worldwide fucking series.
Look, we're gonna go see the movie when it comes out.
I know, but I'm just trying to tell you.
But I'm telling you, the average person doesn't know anything about this shit, and they're not gonna fucking go see it.
Okay.
Because a lot of people don't like Dane DeHaan. Okay. And I know I sound like a dick.
You sound completely fucking uninformed about this. I'm not saying that I'm any more informed than you are. Just finding out about this.
I know. Look, I'm just trying to do the average person's perspective on this one. That's how I see that this turning out, that it's just not going to make money over here.
Several commentators such as Kim Thompson of the Comics Journal, film critic Jean-Philippe Garand, and newspaper Liberation have noted certain similarities between Valerian albums and the Star Wars film series. Both series are noted for the lived-in look for their various settings and diverse alien creatures. The design of Valerian and Lurleen's XB-982 astroship and the Millennium Falcon that appears in Star Wars 3, episodes 3 through 7. Okay, well, the Millennium Falcon really didn't show up in episode 3, but The Empire Strikes Back. So there's just a fucking ton of influences between these two. Similarities between Conan and Birds of the Master, Mufuni's Last Song. This fucking thing has been going on for years.
This movie has a $180 million budget.
I know.
Damn.
First appeared November 9th, 1967, issue 420. There have been 420 issues prior to that when it came out. Wow. That's a lot of fucking art.
All right. So.
Yeah. See, here it is. The first Valerian album to be translated into English was Ambassador of the Shadows, which was serialized across 4 issues of the magazine Heavy Metal in 1981 to volume 5, number 1. So January through April of 1981. Ambassador was later republished in English in album format as were World Without Stars, Welcome to Alf Lolo, and Heroes of the Equinox by the short-lived Dargod USA and Dargod Canada, 1981-1984, and then republished 1984-1985. It was going to republish in 1989, but nothing came of it. Heroes of the Equinox was republished in 1996 by Fantasy Flight Publishing in two issues as a standard American-sized comic as part of an unsuccessful attempt to translate. Who cares about that? In 2004, iBooks published Valerian the New Future, collecting the albums On the Frontiers, The Living Weapons, and The Circles of Power in one volume reduced to standard graphic novel size. These were the only Valerian iBooks published, and the company has since declared bankruptcy. Good job, guys. And UK publisher Cinebook is currently publishing English language editions of Valerian. The problem with this stuff right here is that they're trying to do translations on books that they're terrible at translating. So what they do is they effectively change the story. Mm. So what they actually should do is keep it, and then in between the pages, and they're just going to have to add pages where they can actually do an English translation. So you can look at the pictures, read the fucking translation in between, and then flip the page. So that way you don't ruin the fucking, or you just keep the original novel the way it is, the graphic novel.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you create a book out of it, and you write the fucking the dialogue, you know, page one, page two, page three, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That way it can be translated, and then you don't have to worry about all the other stuff. But most of the other translations have been done fine. There's also an animated adaptation that was... And Studio Canal tried to say, Time Jam Valerian and Lorraine made his debut on Canal Plus Family in France. In total, 40 26-minute episodes have been made. The series Franco-Japanese co-production. Oh, Time Jam Valerian and... I'm going to have to look that up. 40 26-minute episodes. All right. Anyways. My biggest point of this whole argument is it looks more Fifth Element than Lucy, than anything else. Mm. And we were disappointed with Lucy and shit like that.
We weren't disappointed with Lucy. We liked Lucy.
We
Lucy
were disappointed.
Was better than we thought it would be. I remember that.
Not me.
I remember you liked it.
I liked it, but it wasn't great. I was disappointed because of its lack of context and a lot of the shit that was wrong with the fucking movie. But my whole take on Valerian is, although the title is a little bit too long, if they had said based on the international best-selling comic, you know, instead of just having it flash by, if they had stated, if the announcer stated based on the international best-selling comic by, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. See, it has the appearance of being...
Cowboy Bebop-ish?
Yeah. We're just friends. Look, a fucking flying whale. But if you notice, I mean, when they were doing it, you know, the director of The Fifth Element and the director of Lucy, then nothing else. But, you know, he's done a ton of other things that have never made it here in America anyways, which, you know, I wish they would bring Taxi, the original Taxi here, which is a fucking great fucking movie. Well, I wouldn't say great, but it's...
Better than the Queen Latifah one?
Oh, God, yeah. It's a funny fucking movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's like multiple sequels of it.
Trust me, I saw District B-13 after we saw Brick Mansions, and the original was way better.
Oh yeah,
and it was, and the whole thing was in fucking French, dude, and it still was better. All right, so anyway, that's all we got. So the trailer looks good to you. I like it. It looks interesting, and look, Luc Besson did an awesome job with Fifth Element. So right. I hope the movie's good. We'll see.
Yep.
All right, it's going to be coming out July 21st of next year. So we'll check it out, definitely. All right. So it's called Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Okay. All right. So for a couple of Average Joes, Flicks of the Week, I am Joe Spiegel.
Mike Sutherland.
All right. See y'all with a new flick next time.
What? See y'all with a new flick next time?
Yeah. He's shaking your head. You can't see him, but he's shaking his head. I'm describing it for you.
This is how Joe ended the podcast. Just think about it this way. After the argument and everything else, see you with a new flick next time. And then he had like a serious, like fucking gangster look on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's how I did the... I'm completely at a loss for words. I'm, you know, what the fuck?
That's my motherfucker.
Okay. You're a dork.
I know.
All right, let's get done.
All right, bye.
Bye.
good show! Jolly good show! Jolly good show indeed!
Hakuna Matata, bitches!
Please share the podcast. The more people that listen, the better off we are. Thanks again.
For more great podcasts and my movie reviews, don't forget to visit www.acoupleofaverageshows.com.
This is the end. It's the end. Finito! The end, I tell you! We're all going to nibble the dust!
Or go fuck yourself.